This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you think back to the weeks and months after September the 11th, it seemed like the whole country held its breath. The scale of the atrocity and the gravity of the situation made a lot of people wonder when we'd be able to laugh again. How do you make jokes amidst such tragedy? How do you release the pain, though, without laughter? At the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, stand-up comics who call themselves the Arabian Nights took the stage to try to both entertain and to demystify stereotypes.
Those guys screwed everybody. Those guys that hijacked the plane, they screwed everybody. They screwed me, they screwed you, they screwed future generations. Like, high school kids are going to hate those guys in the future because their names are so hard to pronounce. History tests are going to suck. You know what I'm saying? They're going to be like, name the 19 guys who hijacked the planes. Kids are going to be like, Alpha Keek, Fakook. Alpha Cock, for Coke, Alpha Coco, for Cuckoo, Alpha Kiki. I'll forget it, man. Forget it. I'll take the F, man.
That was one of the Arabian Nights, Iranian-American Maz Jobrani, and that clip was from a performance of the club Dublin's in Hollywood, California. Have you caught any of the Arabian Nights tour? Did it make you laugh? What is the role of humor in helping us address uncomfortable subjects? Are there some things that are never funny? Are there some things that have only become funny again recently? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Later in the program, Sylvia Pagioli will join us for a 20-minute vacation to Italy, and we have an email challenge for you. What's the vacation destination that you dream about? Where would you go and why if time and money were no object? The email address again is TOTN@NPR.org. But first, the Arabian Nights. Three of the comics join us now from the studios of NPR West in Los Angeles. You've already heard a line from Maz Jobrani. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello, hey, Neil. How are you?
Hey, Neil.
And amidst there was also Egyptian-American Ahmed Ahmed and Palestinian-American Aaron Kader. And two of you, though, began your careers as actors. Ahmed Ahmed, your resume includes appearances in movies including Swingers and Executive Decision. Maz Jobrani, you were in Malcolm in the Middle, Friday After Next, NYPD Blue. What made you take up comedy?
This is Ahmed. Ahmed Ahmed talking to you, Neil. Thanks
okay.
for asking.
Thank you.
I was an actor, much like my, you know, we were actors for many years, and I think my reason for getting into comedy was to break down the stereotypes, because a lot of the roles that I played younger were oftentimes, you know, being cast as terrorists, cab drivers, the sleazy Arab prince, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just painted myself into a corner and decided, you know, I had a voice, and I'm very American and just wanted to explore that voice. And about 9 years ago, I decided to get into comedy, and I took a huge pay cut as a comedian, but was able to find a voice and expand my art a little bit more than I did as an actor.
What about Maz Jobrani? I know that in addition to your stand-up routine, you were also cast in a lot of these same kind of roles. Though it's not always been a great honor, as I understand it. We have another clip of tape. This is from part of your routine at the Dublin's in Hollywood.
And then in Hollywood, too, you get typecast sometimes. I recently did a movie with Chuck Norris, and as a Middle Easterner, doing a movie with Chuck Norris is bittersweet because you know you're going to die. You know, my agent called me up and said, you got a movie? I'm like, yes. He's like, with Chuck Norris. I'm like, damn. Because, you know, I'm not going to be his counterpart. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to be like Chuck and Hassan saving the world, you know? Okay, Chuck, you get those guys. I get these guys. See you back at the base. All right.
Maz Jobrani, how many of those, squibs have gone off in your chest in your Hollywood career, designating the bullet holes?
Yeah, I've been shot a few times. My mother doesn't like that.
It must be hard to take your parents to that movie.
Yeah, yeah, kind of a downer. And then you really you know you're not going to come back for the next episode, so that kind of stinks too. but yeah, as Ahmed was saying, you know, Neil, we try. Recently, my agents and I have decided to not do those parts. This past year, actually, I did play terrorists on a few episodes of 24, and the reason I took that part was because it was written differently. It was written in such a way where the character that I played, halfway through his mission, decides he doesn't want to do it, so he turns around and says, "I don't want to kill anybody," and he actually ends up getting killed for saying that. So I'm still getting killed, but at least I'm being a good guy about it, you know. And there are other parts too, you know. I mean, You know, there was a movie I was in called Mariam, which was a movie done by an Iranian-American filmmaker. And in that, I just played a regular Iranian guy in the late 70s in America, actually trying to be American, trying to be Italian, really. So there's good parts like that, too. So that's what we're trying to do with some of the choices we're making now, and definitely with our stand-up, we try and put out that positive voice.
Also, too, just to interject, this is me again, Ahmed Neil. Middle Eastern audiences really get upset when movies like that come out. When I did Executive Decision, there was a huge protest, mm-hmm. and people actually called me and were furious with me and said that, you know, you're blasphemizing your religion and your culture, and how dare you sell out, and this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, well, look, if I don't take the part, they're going to give it to a Mexican guy. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
There were a lot of people who cheered that movie, too, because it's the only Steven Seagal movie where he dies in the first 10 minutes.
Right? Yeah. And he got paid $1 million for it.
Yeah, that is so true.
Aaron Kater, how did you get into the act?
I just started doing comedy about 99, and it was just one of those things, like Ahmed said, to find your voice and expand your art and find different ways to express yourself. It's the most free thing you can do in town. You know, you don't need an agent. You don't need to audition. You can just go up there and write your own material. And already, I've had a chance to play an Armenian, and on The Shield.
Oh, really?
which he was great in, by the way.
And it's funny because I look probably less Arab than these guys. I have, you know, green eyes and my hair's a little lighter, but. But yeah, already I've started to get into it, and I've gone on tons of auditions for these Arab parts, and I don't see it. I don't see it in myself, you know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, this is Ahmed again. Just for the record, none of us knew we were going to start an Arab show right. until we got to the Comedy Store, and that's when Mitzi Shore, the owner of the Comedy Store,
and mother of Pauly Shore,
mm-hmm. of Pauly Shore, and you know, she's very well known for championing a lot of people's careers and finding new voices. And we all were just comedians before 9/11. And then she actually had what she called an epiphany, and thought that there was going to be some trouble between America and the Middle East, and that when it happened, she wanted to be the first club owner to put Middle Eastern comedians on her stage because no one else would do it, and she's always been ahead of her time. We all thought she was crazy. And then sure enough, after 9/11, you know, she was in fact right, and she decided to start a show and title it Arabian Nights and actually, you know, do a show with strictly Arab comedians. We threw in a Jew and a belly dancer, and hence the show.
We're still working on a good name.
But yeah. she was the one who actually who created the show, and it was really her vision.
And
you know?
to stem the tide of email corrections, Maz Jobrani, we know that you are not an Arab if you're Iranian.
Yeah, that's been actually an issue. It's interesting because, as Ahmed was saying, this show was put together around the year 2000, right when the most recent intifada started in the Middle East. And I think one of the reasons Mitzi did it also was as an expression, her being Jewish, an expression of peace and showing how she can put Middle Eastern American comics on stage. There's also a fourth comic who works with us. His name is Sam Tripoli, mm-hmm. who is part Armenian. And basically, yes, the whole Iranian situation, you know, Iranians aren't Arabs. We're Caucasian, and some Iranians get upset at that. But the name was the name that Mitzi Shore decided to put on it, and it's actually a catchy name, Arabian Nights. And until we come up with a better name, that's the name that we're using.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. And Mary joins us on her cell phone from Provo, Utah.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would just like to say that I do like this, the comedy, because it does seem more real than some of the movies that we see and the characters that are portrayed. But the comedy is coming right from, you know, the people who are living through being Arabians or Iranians in the United States.
So, well, obviously you can always pick up your various preferred form of media, and whether it's a movie or stand-up comedy. But, Mary, I was fascinated. I heard a piece by my colleague here, Michelle Norris, a little while ago, who was talking about how comedians were able to address racial issues in ways that, you know, a lot of other entertainment forms just weren't able to get to. Do you feel the same way here?
I think I agree, yes. With something as mournful as a September 11th, with time passing, the comedians are able to be who they are on stage. And I think that with the outburst of laughter in a live audience with a comedian, you can get more out of a healing process than you can just in a theater, because theaters are different and television, and sitcoms are different than an actual stand-up comedian show.
Well, thanks very much, Mary. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks,
have
Mary.
A great day.
You
thanks,
too.
Mary.
I like Mary. I think those Mormons are going to inherit the Holy Land eventually.
Well, Maz Gibrani, one of the things that she said that I found interesting was with the passage of time, how long after 9/11 did you have to wait before you thought it was appropriate?
Well, you know, when September 11th happened, we all of us were thinking, man, we can never be funny again. I mean, at least I was, and I know the guys, we've talked about this. You just feel like, what am I doing? You know, you hear about doctors and firemen and policemen helping out, and you're going, they're saving lives, and I'm telling jokes. And it was just really depressing for a while. And I myself, I was booked to perform at a private function in Orange County, which is predominantly white, and I was actually scared to go down there. And I spoke with the gentleman who was running it, and I said, you know, I want to cancel. And he said, no, actually, we need you to come down and do the show. And he said that the wife of the proprietor of the property where I was going to was Turkish. And I went down, and they actually embraced me, and it helped me. It was cathartic once we started. And again, Neil, it's always you're constantly healing, and with time you're able to find more and more insights into it. I know these guys have a couple takes on that too.
go ahead, Ahmed.
I was just going to say there's a little saying, they say tragedy plus time equals comedy. And so it's, you know, right after September 11th, we all sort of went through a depressing mourning period. We were more concerned with what happened with the victims and the families, and not so much worried about doing comedy. But, you know, once again, Mitzi Shore.
She had us come back like that very weekend.
That Friday, right after 9/11, she said, we're going to open the club, and, you know.
She put us in the belly room.
She had me open the show, actually. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't want to go up on stage. I got nothing to talk about, you know. Mm-hmm. She said, no, it's important that you go up and, you know, and address the issue. And
I think you've talked about this. It's hard to get up there after 9/11 to make a traffic joke. You know?
My legs were shaking. I didn't know what to say because, you know, most of our humor was Middle Eastern based. But we never really joked about the actual 9/11 event.
And before 9/11 as well, we always kind of made a pact that we said, let's try not to do jokes about terrorism in general.
Right.
This is a bad stereotype. And then after 9/11, it became kind of impossible to avoid. And I know that very weekend after 9/11, we came back. I scrapped all my Arab material and just tried to do my mainstream stuff.
All of us went back to the drawing board. But we also,
work as well as our Arab stuff.
How about those Dodgers, you know?
We weren't really addressing the 9/11 issue, though. This is Ahmed talking again. I was more addressing the repercussions that I suffered after 9/11, like how people would treat an Arab right after 9/11. It was more like, hey, listen to my story. Here's what it's like for me to get on a plane. Here's what it's like for me to go shopping. Here's what it's like for me to get stares and that. I never really addressed what happened on 9/11. I didn't think it was appropriate. Mm-hmm. And Maz and Aaron, I think, will agree.
I don't think we really changed our material. What was funny was that we came back very tentative.
It was more self-deprecating than anything.
Well, but we actually just went back to the exact same material we had, and all of a sudden the response was like 100 times different.
It was thunderous.
And the material wasn't any different. So it was just a perception of the public that kind of changed
our
act.
People wanted to hear Arab voices. I mean, we before our shows, we had predominantly, you know, Caucasian audiences, white audiences, and before our shows, people were always hesitant. And after our shows, people would come out and go, "Wow, I didn't know that. I've been watching CNN so much, and this is my depiction of an Arab."
And another thing,
finally, I feel enlightened. You know.
And another thing was that crowds were laughing louder because I myself was stressed out too. You know, watching CNN over and over and over again, mm-hmm. seeing the destruction, people were laughing louder, and they knew all of the comments that you made. They got everything because they were watching the news. So when you would say Kabul, they knew what Kabul was all of a sudden. They knew what Kandahar was all of a sudden.
All the topical references came out great. And it's true, there is that crawl that runs under everybody's life now as you look out through your eyes. Mm-hmm. We're talking with comics Ahmed, Maz Gibrani, and Aaron Kader, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. You can also email us TOTN@npr.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We have an email challenge underway. Later this hour, I'm going to be going on a dream vacation. Where? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. But before then, take a minute to email us about your dream summer vacation. Where would you go and why? We'll read our favorites at the end of the show. The address is totn@npr.org. Right now, we're speaking about humor with comedians Ahmed Ahmed, Maz Jobrani, and Aaron Kader. If you'd like to join that discussion, our phone number is 800-989-8255-800-989-TALK, and you can also email us on that subject, totn@npr.org. And let's go back to the phones, and Arnisha joins us on from his car in St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hello. I'm sorry I got your sex wrong there.
That's okay. I just wanted to commend the comedians on their efforts to basically make a joke of everything that's basically going on after September 11th and with them being of Arab descent. And just as I'm an African-American woman, but I am married to an Angolan-American, and he's been here since he's been 8 years of age. And, of course, Arabs do come in every shade and color, just as basically African-Americans do. But it's just been hilarious to me that every time we've taken a trip since September 11th, we have gotten stopped at every checkpoint. We've also gotten stopped just before boarding the plane before. And basically the only thing that I can distinguish is the fact that we have a funny last name. It's not necessarily based on how we look or anything like that. It's just the fact of our last name. You can't necessarily tell if it's African or Arab or whatever. But I just really wanted to commend them and tell them that I really think that what they're saying is pretty funny. And it's just nice that we know that we've come to the point that after everything has happened with September 11th, that we can all joke about it at this point.
Well, Arnisha,
we'll be in St. Louis very soon.
Well, make sure you guys announce it so I can come and see the show.
No problem.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks,
thank you.
Thanks for the call, Arnisha. We appreciate it. Well, let's go right now to Bob, who's in his car in Hollywood.
Yes, thank you very much. Excellent program, and commend the gentlemen on their careers. I work in the industry, and it's very sad to say that we need new writers to come into Hollywood.
Amen.
Stop the stereotyping, because it's by all means it's a white issue of respect that your main characters are white, and then of course if you're a different color, I date a Palestinian myself, and I'm Caucasian and Jewish.
Ooh.
And it's fact. We need a major change. We need younger writers to come in and make a major turn and change Hollywood to what it should be.
Well, Bob, it sounds like your life is a sitcom.
We needed you 10 years ago, Bob. Where were you?
Yeah, exactly. No, well, I just retired as a law enforcement officer and got into the business.
Wow. Good for you, Bob.
So that's another industry to talk about, stereotyping and all that.
Okay, are you a technical advisor or are you writing?
No, I'm a personal manager.
Okay, well, good luck, Bob. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Great show.
Aaron, I wanted to ask you, and I guess in a way this goes to all of you. I mean, you were talking again about the situation after 9/11. Aaron, you're Palestinian-American. Mm-hmm. How topical do you get? I mean,
yeah.
How topical does it not get?
Well, what's topical has been topical for, 50 years, so... It was funny, when I started, I always talked about Israel. I always talked about how they segregate each other and how they hate each other and how they all look the same and how they're all brown and Semitic. And I've always had the same jokes. It's the same conflict, and none of that changes. It doesn't matter what happened today or yesterday or what's going to happen tomorrow. It's still the same conflict with the same problems and the same solutions.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever, though, find yourself, I mean, just as you read the newspapers or listen to the radio or watch TV, all of us are just overwhelmed by sadness at certain times.
Yeah, I mean, I try to stay away from the news as much as possible because... the most topical stuff that is good to use isn't the news. It's those funny little feature stories about how people break into abandoned buildings and collect old plates from, like interesting stories. The news is people are oversaturated, and I think that you have to really have a strong angle on the issue that goes beyond just the topical. You have to cut to the chase. You have to get to the meat of the issue. And as far as writing jokes, you know, your jokes have to have meat. They have to have a point of view and a grain of truth. So you can't just take something that happened today and a death and violence and you just have to get to the point.
Mm-hmm.
This is Maz speaking. I think part of it too. I do read the paper, and I just things sometimes just pop out to me. And like recently, for example, we know Iran's been in the press because of the protests and of the trying to get the nuclear weapons and the sort. And then it just came to me that, you know, whenever as a Middle Easterner, whenever you see a country in the paper, it's a little scary because that means that eventually America is going to be attacking it, because that's what happened, you know, with Afghanistan and then with Iraq. And then mm-hmm. I kept boiling it down. I said, well, you know, there's obviously, we all know, oil is involved. Afghanistan having the pipelines, Iraq having the oil, Iran has oil. And then I said, why don't we ever attack Switzerland, for example? And that's because they have chocolate, snow, and the funny little knife. And who mm-hmm. wants that little knife? And it's just like building a joke on that. And then I end up by saying, I mean, this is something I'm working on right now, and I end up by saying, you know, being a country with oil is kind of like being a drug dealer. You got to know when to get rid of it. So you got to be like, oh, the Americans are coming. Flush it down the toilet. Flush it down the toilet. You know. Yeah.
You figured with all those knives, the Swiss would be the ones being stopped in the air.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Yeah.
But as a Palestinian, for sure, I've always gotten my whole life, you're Pakistanian? You're Palestinian?
What?
They don't even know what it is. Where are your people from? From, well, Israel. Oh, so you're Jewish? No, I'm Palestinian. I don't get it. You know, and it goes around in circles. So now, I mean, unfortunately, it's bad, but people are paying attention, and that's good.
Let's get another caller. Maureen joins us from New York City.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure.
I live here in New York City, and I grew and lived through the tragedy of 9/11. And I have to say that I've always been amazed at the overwhelming openness that I've seen in people here following that tragedy. And I wonder if the comedians have seen that, or if they've seen the opposite, and if they've been heckled on stage because of their backgrounds and their nationalities and their comedy, and what that's been like.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is Ahmed here. Maureen, hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm glad you asked that, because right after September 11th, December of 2001, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. 2001. I flew to New York to perform at Caroline's, mm-hmm. and went on that show, The View, with Barbara Walters and Star Jones. And everybody was really, really warm and completely accepted me and received the material without any sort of, you know, negativity, no hecklers. I think people were sort of really open-minded to hear what an Arab American voice had to say on what happened, not necessarily what happened, but sort of what happened to them. Again, my material is very self-deprecating. It's like, you know, me trying to get on a plane, me trying to fly, me trying to date a girl. It's all very much like, hey, this is what it's like being Arab American, you know, in this day and age.
But
my point is that all the New Yorkers and people on the East Coast were really, really warm and welcoming, and not to my knowledge, I didn't receive any sort of negativity. Everybody in New York was wonderful.
Right. I was in New York.
Elsewhere?
I'm sorry, Maureen, go ahead.
Did it happen elsewhere?
What do you mean?
It was negative?
No.
Heckling.
No.
I was just going to ask. I mean, every comic gets heckled somewhere. I was wondering if you mm-hmm. thought the audiences were being excessively polite.
People are afraid of Arabs.
I think you know what it was mostly is that people are so interested and hearing what we had to say. Mm-hmm. They were like, well, why heckle them when they're going to tell us their story?
And I think that part of it, too, is that when people come to our show, they realize that we're Americans, and mm-hmm. and we're not, you know, we're not up there going, you know, America sucks, and, you know,
okay, you
down with
tell
them.
Jokes now.
Yeah, we're actually Americans. So people, I think the situation gets diffused early when you start making fun of your situation, and then you go, hey, let me criticize what our government is doing, meaning the American government is mm-hmm. doing, and let me criticize what the Middle Easterners are doing that's hypocritical. You know,
it almost becomes just another comedian. It's almost like we're just telling jokes just like any other comedian. What about the
who
government?
Just happens mm-hmm. to be from the Middle East?
Yeah. And another thing is that we've all been doing it now for you know, like 4, 5, 8, 7, whatever.
Nine
like we
years.
All have 9 years for Ahmed. And the fact is, it's not like we started after September 11th. There's a few people that have done that to try and take advantage of the situation.
Yeah, a lot of comedians came out of the woodworks and jumped on the 9/11 bandwagon.
And in that situation, maybe, you know, you're not as weathered, so you won't be able to handle yourself on stage. But, you know, again, luckily we've had the support of Mitzi Shore at the Comedy Store and just learned to grow strong so that if mm-hmm. somebody does make a stupid joke and say, you know, hey, camel jockey, you go, oh, well, that was smart, you know, mm-hmm. and you just have fun with them and diffuse it.
But the point being that New York audiences are definitely more sensitive to it, and I think we are more sensitive to them.
We just got back from an East Coast tour. We were in D.C. and New York.
This is a media first to hear audiences in New York described as polite and positive.
I know.
I'll tell you. I mean, it was really. I was really surprised because I was more scared to go to New York and do comedy than I was anywhere else because that's where the tragedy happened.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, people were so warm and so like interested to hear what we had to say. Aaron Maz and I just came back from D.C. and New York and just did a whole East Coast tour over there, and you know, we ended up selling out two shows at the D.C. Improv and Stand Up New York, and the crowds came out, and you know, they want to hear a point of view. It's like, you know, it's similar to when, you know, Paul Rodriguez came out and Richard Pryor came out and Margaret Cho came out. It's like when distinct voices come out in the comedy world, it's really a special thing because nobody's really talking about their culture until a comedian comes out and talks about it.
And that's the beauty of America, is that we can go out and do this. You know, there's some countries, whether it's Middle Eastern or African or whatever, other countries where if we were doing some of these things, we'd get arrested, you know. So,
and Neil, let's face it, the Muslim comedy scene has really faded in the last few years.
Well, Aaron mentioned that one day he'd like us to go do an HBO special called Live from the Gaza Strip.
Gaza Strip Live, yeah.
Gaza Strip Live. If that ever happens, then, we'll see if world peace can happen.
Please let me know if it does.
All right. And Maureen, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks, Maureen.
So long. Let's go to Mac, and Mac's in his car in Apex, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, Mac. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask the panel about anger in their humor. It seems like so much comedy, especially ethnic comedy, has got an element of anger, and it's a safe way to express anger, and that's where some of the healing comes from. This group seems to sort of be going out of its way to not be angry or not express anger, at least on your show. And I'm wondering whether anger does creep into the act and how they deal with that.
It does. This is Ahmed here. It does a little bit. I'm not really. I'm speaking for myself, and I'll let Aaron and Maz answer your question too. But my anger really stems from, you know, it takes me a long time, and these guys can vouch for me because they've flown with me. My name is on the FBI's most wanted list. If you go to Google.com and punch in my name, I come up on one of the top five most wanted terrorists. And
because you share the same name as one of them.
Yeah, not that I am.
Not because he is one.
let me just establish the fact.
Stand up for now.
Yeah, you know. Stand up comedy for now. Terrorism later. No, it's
the sounds of sirens approaching our NPR list.
We got them.
I found out somebody sent me an email with a list of names that's their aliases that one of the terrorists was using, and my name happened to be like the third name. And so whenever I fly, I technically have to get to the airport extra early, and I go through a whole, almost like a body search, and they call the TSA, the CIA, the FBI, and they make a real big deal out of it. And I'm compassionate and tolerant to it, and I think that they're smart to do that. On the other hand, I'm like, hey, I'm a comic. Let me tell a joke.
Yeah.
And some of my anger and my material stems from that because, you know, I'm trying to, like, explain to people, you know, that I'm not connected to any of this, you know, stuff that's going on. But, you know, I also have to be tolerant and patient with it because, look, September 11th wasn't a pretty thing. And it was, you know, Arab terrorists who committed the crime. And, you know, thank God that our airport security is tightened up and checking people. But I,
on the other hand, it's a good thing that you have the outlet to do these jokes on stage.
That's exactly what it is.
The audience with the wand in their hand, they're not a good audience. That's a good crowd.
Right.
That's why comedy is so important for us, because when things like this happen, we can't really talk to anybody about it. So the audience is the best place to talk about it, and that's our therapy. And that's right. When people laugh, you go, okay, good, they got it.
That's why Ahmed's a very good spokesperson for us. He's also very patient. I don't know whether I'm so angry because I'm a Palestinian or whether I was just born like this.
Aaron's the lead singer of our band. He's like the poster child of our group.
But as far as anger goes, I definitely get pretty angry. And as for before, I mean, I pay attention to the news. All I was meaning before was that it does get really very frustrating. So, but I deal with that. And my father also works very closely over there, and he's over there a lot. And I've been over there a few times. And I yell and scream up there. I get into it. I talk about how one of my jokes that always gets an applause break, funny enough, is I say, anybody that thinks their ethnicity or their religion is better than somebody else's can burn in hell. And I'm sorry to say it like that, but it becomes one of these really kind of heartfelt. I mean, I get really passionate about it. It's really hard to ignore, you know.
And, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see, get another caller in. This is Ross, who joins us from San Francisco.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Guys, I'm a young comic who's really starting out later in life. I'm 40 years old, and I'm right now in the process of writing and doing some rehearsals, and I'm being coached by a guy who is fantastic, and I have a problem writing about ethnicity because I'm so deathly afraid that I'm going to offend someone.
Where are you from?
What are you?
What's your
I'm a white guy.
Well, then don't write about ethnicity.
Milk, paper, and glue, my friend.
That's right.
No, you know, it's you know, these guys will tell you it's all about doing it and putting in the time and writing and performing and performing and getting comfortable and finding your voice. And then, I mean, the fact that you're scared to write about it could be where your voice that could be where your voice comes in. You could get up on stage and, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to write your jokes, but I'm saying that maybe that is who you are. So
not for anything less than 15% anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You can so, you know, I'll send you the bill. No, I mean, that's the whole point. If you're afraid to talk about it, then maybe that's your voice.
That's why you should do it.
And talk about the fact that you're afraid to talk about it, and in doing it, you'll talk about it.
Come from your heart and talk about your personal experiences. Yeah. Talk about your
you
tragedies.
You have to find a way to talk about all these things.
Talk about what's uncomfortable. That always gets a laugh.
Either that or just lie about your ethnicity. Make something up and just say you're ethnic.
Okay.
Tell them you're an Arab.
Great. Good luck to you guys. I hope to
Thank
see you,
you.
Soon.
And
good luck to you.
And Ross, good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Have you guys considered the idea that, I mean, you said a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon, this may be your moment, this may be the moment in time where you guys individually and collectively are able to address an American audience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've always been doing it, though. Like Maz said earlier, I've been doing comedy for 9 years. Aaron's been doing it for, what, 5-6 years? Mm-hmm. And Maz for...
I've been doing stand-up for 5 years.
5-6 years. Yeah. And it's like we've always been doing it, and we've always been addressing American audiences. 9/11, after 9/11, what happened was it put a magnifying glass on us. And it forced us to really become artists and rewrite our material and dig deeper and really, you know... talk about the, you know, the topics at hand, and
also to break through to an audience that is completely untapped. I mean, there's a ton of Arabs just like us, and we found that when we go do our shows, and they're just and clubs love it because they're an untapped market that likes to laugh, that wants they don't respond to blacks and whites and people and Jews making fun of them. They want Arabs
making fun of them, and then they're all you know, business. They're all doctors, lawyers, dentists. They're
and
all
another
bankers.
Thing is that, like Ahmed was saying, you know, we're in it because we love it. We're passionate about it. Mm. You know, 10 years from now, if these are the topics that are out there, or these are the topics that inspire us, then we'll talk about them. You know, maybe 10 years from now I have kids, I start talking about my kids, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I don't see it as our moment. I see it as just another
what we do.
Step.
Yeah. Before we violate a principle of show business, Ahmed, where does the Arabian Nights tour go next?
We will be at the DC Improv September 23rd and 24th. You can go on the website, www.dcimprov.com. We say the show sold out like in a week last time we were there, so you want to go... get tickets right away. And also Stand Up New York as well.
Ahmed, Maz Jobrani, and Aaron Cader, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
When we come back, a dream vacation. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.